Good evening, everybody, and welcome to our regular Monday stream. We're back.
We're back.
I very nearly did like the Ashens. Hello, but that might confuse people.
Do 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 do. Hello.
Basically, yes. We are technically not late. We are technically never late. Never late. Never black pilled.
No, and never again.
Never late.
Never late. Never black pilled. Never again.
Yes. I guess I could do hello everyone. This is the infinite bubble. We're still in the Zoom. No, I'm not.
No, if it was really us, it's just a hello.
Hello. Just retard noises, basically, yes. oh dear.
But anyway, it is a Monday. We are aware that shit happens on a Monday. Nothing really ever, you know, nobody wins the lottery in a Monday.
Monday, yeah. There's a Which reason Garfield not, doesn't like him.
Yeah, and neither do you, because you get some
Tell
pretty crap news today. We've sort of let folk know elsewhere, but for want of a better way to describe it, we might both be neats soon enough. So we would sort of appreciate maybe at this current moment some extra, or not necessarily extra, but continued support as we have done. Both in terms of people sharing stuff and interacting and doing the algorithm comments, and also more importantly, if they wish to, support us via something like the Ko-Fi, or becoming a channel member on the YouTube, or becoming a subscriber to the Substack, because long and the short of it, you may have basically just lost your job.
It's not so
we're not exactly sure what we'll be doing for the next few weeks, so we'll see how things go,
but it's not for political or any dodgy reasons, really.
No.
It's for boring reasons, which is companies merge and finally have redundant departments. Quite a common story, but it's something that has happened quite quickly, it seems. So we're not in a dire state, but I am currently looking for work unexpectedly.
Yes.
But it's not as bad as it could have been. It's not been a disaster. It's just been kind of a shock, honestly.
But it just might mean, say, at some point in the next few weeks, there are either funny schedules or busy days that mean maybe a stream or two might get missed, or there might not be as much stuff going up. I just thought I would let people know. And yes, we desperately need 10D funds.
We do.
We're so hungry.
Oh, no. We have no Twixes. We have no 10Ds. Mostly because we have alternate food in the house. we'll get our shilling out of the way quickly. I've done quite a lot of shilling today. If you want to support us without the YouTube tax, do support us via the Ko-Fi. That has a PayPal function with it as well. I believe there is a PayPal link below too, although that kind of does double duty in that it, you know, PayPal or Stripe, it's basically anyone can use that. It's quite a good service. We'll be using one of our Substack articles a little bit throughout this. It'll form the basis. We do this sometimes. We'll put out a Substack article, and then we won't just read it, but we'll build on it as a stream. So you can support us over in the Substack. We also have, for paid members, the streams go up as audio podcasts, and you also get our full set of research notes. So that's kind of our reward for paying subscribers over on the Substack. And of course, there is all the functionality on YouTube itself. So yeah, there's a few avenues there, but yeah, we're having some uncertainty at the moment, let's say. So I guess this is technically what we do for a living at the moment.
Oh no, we've actually become those people.
I always do find something, but it's a little concerning. But that's just kind of what's going on in the background. We'll not try and sell you a sob story here. We have actual things to talk about. Before we do, though, weather reports.
It's been shite.
Yeah, it was okay for a couple of days. It was like sunshine and showers for a bit, and the temperature went up and then immediately went down again. It's like autumn. It's like an autumn day. It's just absolutely batting it down out there. So, yeah, those of you who tune in for the weather reports, there's your infinite weather report.
Get that job, you bloody hippies. Just, I can't see the word bloody without thinking about it.
Oh, you bloody.
Bloody neats.
Bloody. But today we'll be talking about the infinite bubble. As I said, it's derived from our infinite bubble Substack piece. I'll actually put that in the chat if people want to read along. Because we'll be doing bits from it, but like I said, we...
This is your job now, incoming Raid Shadow Legumes shilling.
Raid Shadow Legumes.
Rame Shady Leggings. How many of these have people got?
Yes. Rainy.
I will say you might want to get the article on the screen.
Yes. I was about to switch over to that one. But, I don't know, before we start, I do have my slight spiel about the bubble. It's not merely a financial bubble, but it is the infinite bubble. The bubble only grows. It never goes away. Sometimes it contracts, but it never truly pops. It is fed by central banks via the money printer. This has been going on since 1914, and the 20th and 21st century are just one big hangover from World War I financially. For more on that, do see our democratization series.
Yes.
Generally, it ends up on the end slate of all our videos at the moment, because that's the way I've set them up. But yeah, if you are confused about our historical setting stuff, like I'd say that the democratization series is somewhat of a prerequisite to certain things we talk about.
Yes, because it helps you to understand a lot of the basic economic and political dynamics that we are relying on people to at least grasp on a surface level so that we can do some of the more sort of in-depth, in quotes, analysis that we do. But yes, the general notion that things are a bubble, I think, is actually quite, maybe not fully mainstream, but people understand, at least in some basic sense, that a bubble means that elements of the economy, whether it's the whole thing or not, is a different question, don't last.
Yeah.
You know, people just sort of implicitly understand that, oh, well, you know, I bought a house at X value, but now I'm paying this much for a mortgage, and I can't be guaranteed what it's going to be worth when I sell it. And if that's even if I do pay off my mortgage, people sort of just instinctively know that's not going to last forever.
Yes. It's something that we take for granted in the background, but throughout all of this, throughout all our streams, like the entire time we've been doing all of this, there has been this ticking up of the compound interest. In fact, I use kind of the Dino ticking, you know, tick as a ticking, yes, over of credit, but also tick as a ticking time bomb, as a framing device for the Substack piece. But really, all of this goes on. When we talk about inflation in the news and when we talk about inflation here, what it is compound inflation. It is,
yes,
inflation on inflation on inflation on inflation. It's very telling that the Bank of England has its everlasting target for inflation, which is 2%.
Yeah.
Which basically just means an exponential curve.
Well, yes, if you compound 2% from 1 year to the next,
yeah,
continuously, I think after like 40 years, you basically get double.
Yeah.
And then after 20 years, you get another double. And in 10, because as you say, it's exponential, before you know it, you get to a point 100 years down the line, not far off where we are now,
yes,
where basically the value of things almost double across the space of a year. Or shall I say, half, because the money is less valuable.
But yes, that's what goes on here. We are at the end point of an everlasting inflationary cycle monetarily, but also in many other ways. And a lot of people are seeing it through the outgrowth. The outgrowth is the pizza on tick.
Yes.
I'm just putting out a really stupid post when I think I might have put it on the Telegram, but what was it? Dino gets his kicks with pizza on tick.
Yes.
but it's really, it's not, through the research for this article and other things, it's not the Dino who is the main culprit in all of this. When it comes to consumer credit anyway, it's actually a lot of the upper middle classes you'll find are the ones who utilize credit.
Shall we maybe go through a few things first before we get fully into trying to describe the economic reality? Let's go through, as you say, some of the results what the system has brought us.
Well, I'll blitz us through the mainline figures really quickly. This is the perverse outgrowth we've seen of credit expansion. We've actually seen indicators like repossessions and people going into getting into trouble with their mortgages decreasing.
Yes.
That is because, not because things are getting better in the housing market, they're not. It's because banks are allowing people to take a lot of payment holidays. It's almost impossible to have a 2008 type situation in Britain right now, not because things are so healthy, but because people are effectively not called in on their mortgage payments.
Well, in a certain sense, the government is preemptively already bailing people out without calling a bailout by engaging in you know, rent moratoriums, mortgage moratoriums, or sort of slyly turning around and basically actually cutting off the interest they would otherwise be charging people on their mortgages that they aren't. Seen as how the Bank of England, I think, is what, is it now something like 5.5%, 5.25%?
Yeah, which is...
I can remember about not far off 2 years ago now when it first creeped above 2% again. And we, I sort of suggested that, oh, this'll keep going. And this'll keep going for years. And there's people like, no, it'll not go past 4. It'll not go past 4.5. Here we are, fast approaching 6, well, possibly 7%.
We've seen here that there's been several paradigm shifts, as it were, even in the inflationary era. 75 is a good kind of starting point. You see it fluctuate heavily as the country attempts to get to grips with the hyperinflation of the late 70s. And it generally stays quite high throughout the, you know, largely prosperous 80s.
This is the way that it used to work.
Yeah.
You know, even in the Keynesian, you know, heydays of, say, 1971 onwards, when you can argue with no denial that everything had been fully disconnected from gold.
Yes.
You know, when there was too much inflation because there was too much easy money being spent, the banks, in their best interest, because they wish to stay solvent and they wish to have people repay them money at a value that makes making future loans worthwhile, increase the interest rates so that more of the money gets called back in, so the inflation slows down, so the future loans are still worth some kind of money without destroying the value of the money itself.
Yes.
Except nowadays we have it the other way around, where the whole game seems to be predicated on destroying the value of the money. So, well, they make it double A's worse.
To explain a fag packet version of it, why this is because in real terms, the economy is incredibly unhealthy.
Mm.
And what would be considered an emergency rate cut, say in the 70s, down to near 4%, which was unheard of, and then kind of back down when things normalized down to 8%, which caused a, you know, a credit expansion there. You can see how it happens. There's slow falls and quite sharp rises to get it back under control. But as you see that the interest rate levels have trended downwards, because as Western economies degrade, they need to rely on the infinite easy money, even more so than before.
Yes.
And we've seen here, you know, historic highs. They're talking about the base rate, but this just puts it in context that really we're still in the 2008 paradigm. We're still in the pre-financial crisis overheating of the market paradigm in terms of rate levels. And here's what's happened. I think it's 5.25 now.
Yeah.
So really all we've done is come out of what is an effective negative interest rate level.
Yes. If you were to map inflation over this, because obviously, in a, you know, again, on a back of the sort of fag packet style, you set a loan so that the value of the money you get paid back at the end of the period of the loan equates to, you know, a profit relative to the size of the risk, you know, plus a premium to cover for inflation. So you lend £100 at 5%. So that you get paid £105 back at the end of the year, knowing inflation is going to be 2 to 3%, so that you're, you know, still, you know, £1.50, £2 up on your £100 originally.
Yes.
But if the inflation's 10-15% and you're loaning out at 5%, then even with that 5% premium on top of the money you originally loaned, by the time you get it back at the end of the year, is worth less than what it was then.
We are, of course, on collapse watch.
Oh, of course.
We are basically on permanent collapse watch now. But we also have the Yellen bubble,
I mean,
which will come up occasionally.
We've not really had sort of major economics nerdery for a while. And I think that's just because we can, I presume, most people at least grasp the basic portions of it.
We'll go over some of the QE stuff and some of the hilarious, latent, oh no, printing money causes inflation stuff that we've seen. But this basically is the amount of money that the Bank of England has printed and then used to finance UK debt.
Well, it just, the point is that when real interest rates, that is interest rates equated over inflation, reach zero or a negative point, it's like numbers breaking down. There is nothing valuable in the economy anymore. And that to some extent, the people making loans no longer see value in time.
No, it is effectively the economic equivalent of dividing by zero. It really is.
Yeah.
And stuff stops making sense. You're no longer doing economics.
Well, it also indicates that your time horizons have almost become like completely inverted and backwards. You're trying to get money out as opposed to get it in.
Well, what happens when you divide by zero? You get infinity. This happened actually after I wrote the Infinite Credit Bubble article, because it's perfect. It's perfect framing, because this is literally the infinite mortgage.
Yep.
We now have, thanks to the place that is Canada, we've not talked about Canada. One, because Canada's not relevant. It's a backwater. No one relevant lives there. And also, it's horrifying and depressing, but it's also an irrelevant backwater. And it'd just be blackpilling for blackpilling's sake. Canada is poor Canada. Really, it's very much further down the pipeline than even we are, I would say, in many ways. And they found themselves in a corner. To briefly sum up how this happens, some mortgages have a fixed payment and a variable term. So if you buy at a high interest rate point and then interest rates fall, the term of your mortgage falls. So if you take out a 25-year mortgage at a low point in interest rates, then interest rates, say, go up from 2.5% to 5%. That affects you more than anyone, because it's not about the interest rate you had. It's about the relative percentage change from that point. And people have found that their mortgages have, in effect, gone infinite.
Yes. I mean, in a certain sense as well, this also points to something that just, it's an innate reality. Feudalism is the natural relationship between man and man. It is the only sustainable one. Elites, and our elites especially, are constantly at odds with this reality. They own the serfs all the same, but subject to themselves to no responsibility. So instead of you having a lifetime guarantee to a plot of land, both for you and your kids and their kids, you know, providing you work as part of the community to, you know, grow wheat or raise cows or, you know, chickens or whatever it is, yeah, whatever part you play, and you have this sort of lord that looks over you and handles the maintenance of the land and all these other elements, you don't get any of that, but you do still get to be owned indefinitely by someone.
This is where the 50-year mortgage stuff in the UK is going. 50-year mortgages are an approximation of this, but really it's this line here. They'll help avoid defaults today, but what about when the defaults come? And it's a farcical situation, because really, if you have an infinite mortgage, the default, as long as you have an income, the default can never come.
No, because there's no, the interest payments never, in theory, tick up, because there's no final payment to be given. It's a rental.
Yes, it really is just a rental. You are renting a property from a bank, which in some situations, with the current climate, is actually probably quite favourable.
Yes.
But it also ties you into the property. I mean, it also might mean that your property at some point might become sellable if you end up in negative equity, which means you are stuck in the rental.
But I think we sort of have already discussed in a number of ways how that's already happened to a large number, yes, of people in their 50s and 60s.
Where is it? Chalmers, Superintendent Chalmers, like many other homeowners in his building, bought his first condo during the pandemic when interest rates were historic lows. He felt like he won the lottery when he found a 5-year variable mortgage with an interest rate that was only 1.4% at the time. I thought it was a good decision, he said. Now I realise that is not the case.
What are his payments going to be now? Like 8-9% or something ridiculous like that?
Oh, they're not. We just went over that. Chalmers Bank offered him a variable rate fixed payment mortgage, which adjusts to rising interest rates. If the rate goes up, the monthly payments stay the same, but the amortization period, the length of time it takes to pay off the mortgage, automatically rises. That's what I mean. Mm. This is what we talked about. When the Bank of Canada started hiking rates in March 2022, it caught everyone off guard.
Oh no, they actually did it.
Chalmers watched in horror as the rate on his mortgage quickly shot up to close to 6.2%. He hit his trigger rate when only interest is paid on the mortgage multiple times. So rather than shrinking each month as he makes his payment, his mortgage balance is growing, and so is the length of time of his mortgage.
I'm imagining it now. He's sort of standing at the office of the Central Bank of Canada. He's like, "Oh, you're raising these rates because there is, you know, money you're expecting to get paid back, in its entirety across this period. And yes, and can I see this money? No.
Well, it's the fact that he goes into his bank and asks what his rate will be.
Yeah, what's the... Oh god, this is quite a long... Oh, is this one of these horrible long pieces?
Let me see where it is. Sorry, this is the... yeah. There we go. Yeah. The surreal turn in Toronto's housing market didn't really hit Chalmers until a recent visit to his bank to discuss his mortgage. When he looked at how much his amortization period had grown due to the rising rates, he saw something he never thought he would see. An infinity symbol where the amortization period should. It's like writing these for us.
Yeah, my amortization kept getting extended, and after 55 years, the bank said they placed an infinity sign there, he said. I couldn't believe it.
Well, I took out a mortgage that extends automatically when rate rises at record low rates. Why is my... It really is just stupidity.
These are the loopholes we have to tie ourselves up into to try and live the reality that we own ourselves.
Yes. This is actually just the modern world breaking down.
Yep.
This is dividing by zero. Zero interest rates lead to infinite mortgages. And now we have seen them. We have seen the infinite mortgage. Thank you, Glow in the Dark, for the $2. The true Infinity War, but not the fake Marvel one.
No.
This is the Infinity War. And the performative stupidity is something to behold, because this is from a month ago in The Guardian, as it likes to flag up there. This article is more than a month old, as if reality changes every month. As
it
if
does.
The Guardian... It does. Bank of England's quantitative easing scheme let inflation take root. Again, if you print lots of money, inflation happens.
Mm.
But they're pretending that this is news. And I don't think I'm not going to read loads of these. There's so many of these. They just make me incredulous about the situation.
It's taken them 15 years to work out this very simple fact.
Yeah. It's like I said, they are. It's functioning as intended. It really is. If you get down to it, if you like take an economist and you corner them, because usually what they'll do is they'll just run away if you try and ask them.
Oh yeah,
about
this is what I discovered at university. Is that if you try and actually ask economists about, how do we deal with these like systemic problems that are debt based fiat currency?
Yeah. You know,
that's just how the world works. If we were to do anything else, we'd have to live like we did in the Middle Ages. They say that as if it was a bad thing.
Yeah, if the financial sector requires ever-increasing bailouts that cause mass inflation that require ever-increasing bailouts, how do we not collapse?
But that is gambitalism.
That's just how capitalism works.
Whoa.
And you wonder why you have a lot of people who are like anti-capitalists are really just against the revolution of mass and scale in certain ways, and they just don't realize it. Because your average Torontoite or wherever that guy was from, your average Canadian who's taken out a mortgage doesn't understand what interest rates are. They don't understand how mortgage... Oh, the only reason you would buy a mortgage like that is you do not understand how it works.
Yep.
That's it. That is the reason you buy that. It is enforced economic illiteracy. And mainstream economics is economic illiteracy. It is pretending that variable term mortgages linked to the interest rate are viable in some way.
But that keeps the circulation of money at a higher rate. Ooh.
UK economy became reliant on cheap money due to the bank's actions, warns former permanent secretary of the Treasury. The thing is, they have to say this. I always turn back to like the Iraq War and then belatedly admitting that there were no weapons. This is them saying that the Bank of England does have weapons of mass destruction. It's been using it on us the whole time. But if you go back to, say, 2020... There's actually mention here of the fact that they need to hit the inflation target.
Ooh, I'm trying to remember.
When the money was being printed, they're now saying was toxic. The headline was Bank of England pumps extra $100 billion into UK economy. Quantitative easing expanded to help Britain recover from coronavirus crisis.
Well, we know for there was a certain gentleman called Vladimir Lenin.
Yeah.
In Russia, more than 100 years ago, who took the main lesson from Schumpeter and a lot of other economists that Yes, if you create lots of inflation and you let it run rampant, it's a really good way of collapsing a country.
Yes.
However, I believe that it's actually even more effective if you do it over a longer period of time. Because what you end up with then is controlled, or at least somewhat controlled, crises that allow you to then implement another system of control to solve the crisis, whilst that new instrument of control necessitating another crisis.
This is quite literally the Leninist control of money.
Yep.
They're talking about here the fact that they need to put inflation up. They need to print hundreds of millions during a crisis in which prices should be going down rapidly. They yes. need to make sure that prices are actually going up by 2%. They do not talk about the lag effect in here. They don't talk about the fact that the economy responds slowly because of the counting effect to new money being put into it. So if you get to 2% now, that's a lot more later.
Well, you've got to remember as well that the 2% they are calculating, yeah. I would expect everyone to know this anyway. If they don't, the 2% is calculated on an average basket of goods and their price
CPI, yes.
relative to what that basket of goods equaled 6 months ago, 12 months ago, 5 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
That doesn't actually calculate inflation, because inflation proper is the growth of the total amount of money relative to the total amount of goods that money is being traded for.
Yes, that's why a lot of economists will balk at you if you do the kind of Austrian method. But that's basically the Austrian method.
Well, it's just the quantity theory of money. It's how money was always understood until we had all these sort of perversions that grew out of World War One and World War Two.
That would be considered like quackery now if you were to measure things like M1 and M2 and figure out the total amount of fiduciary media and things like that. But yep. we're getting...
Well, there's a reason why the Fed themselves in America don't calculate M1 and M2 in the same way they used to a number of years ago. Because even that's with the way they go about doing it and how much obfuscation they put in is still an unbelievably telling statistic. Quantitative easing, how it works. The Bank of England prints money. And that money is worth anything. Why?
Yeah.
This is used to buy corporate and government bonds from banks.
Debt.
How does that help the people? The interest rates fall. People pay less for their mortgages, I suppose. Borrowing increases. People spend more and businesses create jobs. Not necessarily true. The economy is stimulated.
Line go up.
In the same way that if you like fired a massive electrical charge through a corpse that has been dead for a couple of days, it might sort of twitch and writhe around.
The analogy I always use is it's setting the house on fire to stay warm.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's the worst combination. Like if you spoke to an economist in like the 1870s and went, yes, we're printing lots of pounds, they'd go, well, that's not good for the economy, but hopefully you're just hoarding them somewhere in case of the crisis. No, we're using them to buy debt.
But no, you're right in the fact that 2 years ago, they started a campaign of unprecedented quantitative easing. It makes 2008 look like a picnic. And they started that with the headlines that quantitative easing would not cause inflation, not above the healthy 2% level that we would expect. And yet, here we are, 3 years later, with the very same outlets that told us that wasn't going to be a problem.
Here's the amount
and they're telling us it's a problem.
Here's the amount of debt that the Bank of England held from buying up those bonds using QE in 2009. This is post-crisis. And every year post-crisis, the balance sheet has grown. We have been basically doing a 2008 bailout every year since 2008.
Yeah, but like before the main part of COVID really starts, it's already nearly... you know, 2.5-3 times what it was in 2008.
Well, we're not going to talk about this in detail because it's talked about in detail in the article, but this is not only, it's led to infinite mortgages, but it's also led to cars being purchased in the same way houses are, because cars are now all financed, and they're all financed on what they call these PTP deals, which are personal contract purchases.
Yeah, and one of the things that's something we've always wanted to kind of focus on, and maybe will one day in a more thorough fashion, is that as this becomes more the case, the cars themselves are not developed primarily as products that last, but developed as ways to sell credit.
They are credit instruments. The car actually becomes irrelevant, which explains the state of both cars and the car industry. It's the same with houses became irrelevant when housing became a credit derivative medium. The house itself doesn't matter. What matters is selling the debt related to the house. But that's kind of the macro indicators. And yeah, it's amazing that they would go, yes, we printed money, and then bad things happened. I should read some of the donations we've got. Thank you for the $5 there, use the eunuch. With infinite money and infinite debt, there are infinite possibilities. Lord Keynes, probably. Thank you for the $2 glow in the dark. The hatchling strategy. It is the hatchling strategy. Well, the hatchling strategy isn't something coined by AA. That's something that's been in kind of debating spheres for a while.
I believe the hatchling actually is something that might have come from Hogarth.
Oh, right, okay.
First and foremost. But that general notion, yes, of people who have studied economics for decades turning around and pretending they don't know the answers to very simple questions.
I always just refer to that as merely pretending.
Yes.
But the true intellectuals or experts parrot what they heard and can't break down an issue or can't come up with a new idea to solve an issue. Well, it's orthodoxy. Thank you for $5 again, glow in the dark. It is, all of this describes economic orthodoxy.
Yes.
What we see is a limited number of levers. They always flirted with them as levers they can pull.
We'll do get a bit here. Like a dog returning to his own vomit, the Bank of England returns to quantitative easing as it is really the only lever they have to pull inside their model of inflationist economics.
Yes.
Our elites have substituted land and capital proper for cheap, low time preference, petty land and capital in the form of mass commercial retail and modern living spaces that act in aggregate as a capital base that spews forth countless derivative markets. These markets cannot be wound back, not without a catastrophe indiscernible from the crash itself. And Parliament, for its part, is pretending to wave its finger at the Bank of England, saying there are allegations of deficit financing.
Allegations of debt. This bit, it just amazes me.
Money printing has been used as a way to create stealth borrowing since before the 2008 financial crisis as one of the hidden tricks used to cause the bubble before the Great Depression.
Yeah. The whole thing is just allegations? What is the... Well, the House of Lords is coming out and saying that the government is using printed money to borrow more money from the money markets, which it is and is doing in the open and has been doing in the open for decades. It's not supposed to. This is not supposed to happen. This process is supposed to be disastrous and it's supposed to be a red line.
Point 73.
Yeah.
Some witnesses said that quantitative easing was not an appropriate tool for supporting the economy and employment through sector-specific lockdowns. Where were they in 2007 and 2008 to tell people this?
Yeah.
Professor Tim Congdon, founder and chairman of the Institute of International Monetary Research, said, "In my view, you should not use a general macroeconomic demand instrument or approach to deal with sectoral-specific issues." Sir Paul Tucker, research fellow at Harvard Kennedy School and former deputy governor of the Bank of England, said he'd question why the Bank of England wish to stimulate aggregate demand just as aggregate supply is closing down.
Thank you, Spurg Media, for the £2.5. I'm not quite sure what that first message is.
Learn a trade, or are you not going to make it when shit hits the fan? No, I don't know what the rest
of that is. Yeah.
And then he says, "You effeminate intellectuals." That's just the one.
I do have a trade.
I know.
It's just a bit volatile. Yeah. I'm in the construction industry. I had a real job.
I can assure you he's not an effeminate intellectual, because I wouldn't be interested. But anyway, what they got here? Point 74. 5th January 2021, the Financial Times published a survey which found the overwhelming majority of the 18 largest investors in government debt believed that the Bank of England had bought gilts to keep the government's borrowing costs down. Well, this is why we sort of covered all the stuff about the bloody pension crisis.
Yes.
Because that's what this was. And they just pretended like it was a nothing burger.
Yeah.
And this is them retroactively after the fact trying to say that, this actually was a problem, even though every single media person and finance person in media said it was a good idea.
Go and look at our pensions in crisis video. It's one of our videos, I believe, actually. Or is it one of our streams? I can't remember. Pensions in crisis, we talk about this exact fact. We are years ahead, it seems, of the people in the House of Lords.
The article reported that many investors were sceptical of the Bank of England's stated motivations for quantitative easing because of a correlation between the amount of gilts the government had issued and the amount the Bank of England had brought during the pandemic. You guys made it too obvious. You got to be more careful.
Well, it's always been obvious that they have been financing government debt and keeping borrowing costs low through quantitative easing. It's just, I didn't realise there was controversy there. I knew it convened what was supposed to happen. I just thought they openly didn't care. The fact they're pretending to care is odd to me. And the fact that they're pretending that this hasn't been happening since the First World War is disturbing to me.
Yeah. We were told that such market sentiments, if sufficiently widespread, could be a danger to financial stability. Francis Coppola, an author and economics commentator, wrote, if markets perceived that the Bank of England was effectively monetizing the government deficit on anything more than a very short-term basis, there would be a risk of a run on sterling, potentially triggering out-of-control inflation and widespread economic distress. Until these guys learn about the dollar.
Yeah, wait, whoa. That's just how the dollar works.
Yes.
Like, the dollar is in a permanent, it's like a permanent run on the dollar, but it's a reserve currency.
And this is the nature of what happens when you develop what's referred to as fiduciary media.
Yes.
Fiduciary media is made up of all the money, assets, and otherwise worthless bits of paper inflated enormously by easy credit and government incentives. As opposed to money being directly equitable and exchangeable at any moment for its face value and specie being physical mediums such as gold or silver, money substitutes, or fiat money as we know it today, is tied to no physical substance held in specific amounts, and therefore doesn't really equate to its supposed face value. An influx of this fiat money makes the pre-existent money proper less valuable, as both paper monies can buy the same goods except in terms of the medium it was once valued in, this being, say, gold. This is the direct result of policies such as what used to be done very early on by the Bank of England, which was a suspension of payment in specie, which meant if you ran a small shop in England in the 1700s and you wanted to pay your staff not in paper but in silver, so you've got money notes from people who have come to your shop, bought products. You then, on Thursday or Friday before close of shop, go to the bank, take the money notes, get that out in silver and gold pieces, and pay your employees in the gold and silver, not the notes.
Yes.
But there was many times in the 1700s, and there's some great stuff from Rothbard on this, and his economic Austrian perspective on economic history, that they just decided, well, we're going to go to war with this bloke Napoleon, so we can't give you gold. And all these people ran around trying to pay their own workers with bits of paper. Workers were not happy. But anyway, this is a direct result of policies such as the suspension of payment in specie or the total delinking of gold from a currency. Each new form of fiduciary media gives us a further roundabout method for inflation to come about and further devaluation of the currency itself.
I've got on screen there. I'm just using Janet Yellen. That's who's in the bubble, by the way, if you don't know. Yellen is the current... No, I'm talking to the people at home.
Well, see, I can distinctly remember one of my lecturers in university bragging because he knew Janet Yellen.
Ew. Yeah, Janet Yellen is the inflator-in-chief. Or she is the inflator-in-chief. I've got her there as Zordon from Power Rangers. You must print more money to save the economy, Power Rangers. Anyway, no, I just there's a as is tradition sometimes in these parts. I think that she also has the most perfect early life section. Let me just read Janet Yellen, the head of the Federal Reserve's early life and education section on Wikipedia. Yellen was born on August 13th, 1946, so not a Holocaust survivor technically, to a family of Polish Jewish ancestry in the Bay Ridge, Brooklyn neighborhood of New York. So, a couple of marks there. Her mother was Anne Ruth, an elementary school teacher, and her father was Julius Yellen, a family physician. Janet has an older brother, born in 1942. He's program director for archaeology at the National Science Foundation.
He is a Holocaust survivor.
Yes. In a speech at the Poland Museum of History of Polish Jews, Yellen said her father's family migrated to the United States from... Sokolow Polski, a small town, Podolski? I don't know. It's all very Iski Wuski to me. A small town about 50 miles outside of Warsaw. She shared that nearly the entirety of its Jewish population, including many of her relatives, were deported or murdered during the Holocaust. It's a bit of a bingo card there. But one of the things that the UK has had pre 2020 became this New Year's era. Yes, Brooklyn. Brooklyn always makes me laugh. Yes, born into a Jewish family in Brooklyn.
Well, of course, we love Brooklyn because yes. Brooklyn is the next Israel. It's little Israel. It's where Larry Fink and all his mates are from.
Little Israel.
We love the nation of Israel. We believe it to be the most legitimate democracy on earth.
Yes.
I love the Jewish people. It's just that simple.
Anyway, we do love Brooklyn too. It's in no way a terrible name.
We know as well nowadays that Ben Shapiro's writers for his team are watching us. So, you know, Isaac, Noah, Joe Josephus, whatever the guys call yourselves, you know, reach out to us. We love Israel too.
Yes, debts including credit card debt and personal loans was 11% in the 2 years to March 2018. So it's not just houses, it's everything. Everyone is more in debt. Everyone is more indebted.
What you mean to say is everyone is enraptured in usury. Not that we're anti-Semites.
Yes, basically, yes. The house prices here in the UK, I know we talked about the fact that people aren't defaulting, but the rises are eye-watering. 22% in York, Southeast England saw 14% overall. This is a single year, by the way, in an already overheated market. So you begin to see Canada had this previously, and they've got the infinite mortgage now. We have 50 in mortgages. I believe we'll probably have infinite mortgages by next year.
Woking recorded the biggest house price increase, up by £93,000, which was just about 20%. Which means house prices went from £500 to £600,000 in the space of a year. No!
Well, that's what I mean. The big offender here is not the Dino. We are not anti-Dino on this stream. They are seen as the creatures of credit, but really they are the lowest rung of what I would consider the credit class.
Yes.
If you are somebody who utilizes credit heavily, it's very likely that you are middle class or above generally. Poor people aren't in large amounts of debt because they're
I've only just
poor.
Noticed how the door frames are done there.
Yeah.
Look how... That's so awful.
Yeah, they're so wonky.
I bet you two of those doors open out into each other as well.
I think they open inwards, fortunately. But yeah, the Dino does get his kicks with his pizza on tick, but he has nowhere near the assets to leverage the kind of debt
that
the middle classes get.
I don't know. I would slightly disagree because I think... The volume you borrow, unless you are like the government's or like Barclays, probably doesn't make much of a difference at the end of the day. It's the normalization and the act of borrowing.
Yes, it is.
It is the mass adoption of credit instruments as just a normal way of life. I mean, I think I maybe even mentioned it. I'm not sure if it was in your Infinite Credit Bubble one.
I love the light fitting hanging out there.
Yeah.
That's fucking, look at it.
I believe it's in the Infinite Credit Bubble article, though, that I mentioned that, you know, in, say, post-war Britain, in the 50s and 60s, there was still a lot of this kind of credit instrument stuff around.
Yeah.
But if you, you know, had a sofa or a settee or the unit that your radio sat on was bought on tick, bought on credit,
yeah.
Layaway, whatever the phrase was at the time, that was something to be ashamed of.
It was.
I mean... If gossip went around the local village, the fact that, oh, you've had your wallpaper done in your house, but you've paid it all in installments, so this would be shameful.
Trump got a fine for putting that light fitting in. if they ever do that, they bloody should fire me. Not that I put light fittings in for a job, but still, no, that's that is an appalling state of that poor light fitting. But you're right in that it used to be a cultural faux pas. To take out credit, and now it is normalized, and that really is what the Dino
got the shiny Turkish teeth too.
They got their Turkish teeth. We again, this is the North bailiffs taking away the Dino house.
Oi mate, you take sap.
It's fucking camel.
Like a camel toe.
It looks like Laura Luma.
Bogged.
Thank you, the Sen of Sen's Fortress, for becoming a member. And thank you, Coney Current Year, for the £2. Janet Yellen, the Andrew Dobson of Biden's cabinet. For those of you who don't know who Andrew Dobson is, I envy you. I really, really do.
But yeah, so, I mean, someone's sort of joking in the chat that everyone should be credit maxing. But that's the game you're sold now.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, I mean, it's peak, like we'd laughed about it on the stream the other week, like those LinkedIn B2B investment stuff.
Yeah.
But the other side of that is all the black people that run around on Twitter talking about a scam credit card company.
Yeah.
And essentially get away with, oh, here's how you maximize your credit score whilst, you know, being able to borrow this much for your car and this much for your house and this much for your business. And here's how you write off this and write off that. The idea that you accrue money through the physical production of and good.
What about you, and bad?
And then you take all that physical money that you hold, it's your own responsibility, and then, you know, use that to, I don't know, spend on something real and one go, and you don't pay it off in portions. It's just like completely alien to people nowadays.
It is, yes. I'm quickly double-checking I've not missed anything on the Ko-Fi as well, but I guess going to have a bit more of a looser discussion, but it's not just credit, really. It's not just credit, and it's not just money. It's the entire thing that we talk about inflationism, and Austrian economics is very good with inflationism as it relates to money. But it is a phenomenon in the wider world. We talked about, this is why we do the infinite X.
Yes.
It is the exponential rise of a section of modernity. The infinite migrant camp, the infinite council stay, the infinite credit bubble, you know, all of this stuff. We don't just use that as a snappy line. It's because all of these things are going, they tend towards infinity. That is what, as described by Sam Francis, the revolution of mass and scale does. That's how the elite stay the elite. That's how the rulers rule. They constantly create this upward pressure in all areas. More, it's not just politics either. It's more technology, more culture.
Seeing as we've got
more media,
we've got a little bit of time here. I think we can let me go on a bit of a rant for a minute. Politics, or not politics, but human society is at first organized almost solely by transcendent and holy religious principles. These transcendent and religious principles are then sort of slowly but surely rationalized into sort of Christian arguments to do with politics. These become further rationalized into purely technical and economic arguments for politics, which is what we live in nowadays.
Yes.
With that sort of element of it being materialized and rationalized, can no longer engage in sort of esoteric ruling arcanum that's talked about in the works of kind of Schmitt. So you don't have, you know, well, we rule because we are the only people that can perform this ritual or this dance, or we are the only people that can read the Latin text and tell you what scripture really says. Now it has to be, we are the only people that can perform this technical ritual, be that, say, I don't know, quantitative easing, whatever the next money trick is. And by not having that arcanum be esoteric and limited, it must then be infinite and never ending.
Yes.
You must always then look towards not just technical prowess, but never ending, more abstract and more prevalent technical prowess, which always demands further growth. And it just spirals and spirals, and this is where you get to what you're about to describe, which is the revolution of mass and scale.
Yes. The revolution of mass and scale is a concept that we talk about quite a lot, and maybe we'll do a dedicated video to it at some point. But really, it's just, it is the wider framing here. Infinite credit is merely the lubricant that the managerial machine needs to keep functioning. What we are talking about, again, is the revolution of mass and scale that started in the early 20th century and was a deliberate attempt to bring about the effects of the earlier industrialization and urbanization seen during the Industrial Revolution and the side effects of it. What happens is, how we get this infinite bubble is during the 19th century, Britain undergoes the Industrial Revolution and then quite literally takes over a large part of the world as a direct result of that. Mm-hmm. One feeds into the other, the empire feeds into the Industrial Revolution, the Industrial Revolution feeds into the empire. The long and short of it is that Britain was able to become a modern state faster than any country was, and was able to do so because of the stability during the 18th century and the fact that they were a nation of laws.
What I Yes. I mean, we think of that as stability from where we are standing. But from someone... from someone who stood in, say, 1820 to someone then stood again in 1880,
yeah,
there was no stability. And this, the thing is that the it was one of the things we've always got annoyed about with some of your very basic Wignats.
Yeah.
Is that look what they did to Britain between the years of, I don't know, 1850 and 1950. That didn't require... there was demographic destruction, but it wasn't racial per se.
No.
It was destruction of the race by a... necessity of technology, but the fact that we were put in dense cities and could no longer be fed and healed properly.
Thank you for becoming a Venus Brother juror. Good whiskey. But you are correct in that from their point of view, this was a tumultuous time, but kind of at the beginning of the 19th century, as we describe in quite heavy detail in our democratization series, you end up with these people, these parliamentarians specifically, and federalists in the US, really. Who look at the Industrial Revolution in both the UK and then that was ongoing in the late 1800s in the US, kind of peaking with the 1902, 1903 kind of robber baron era in quotes that you read about in your history textbooks. They saw a lot of the social changes. They saw a lot of the outgrowth of this, this first kind of revolution, mass and scale that was the Industrial Revolution. And they decided to deliberately turbocharge those aspects of it. They decided to go in and utilize this well, infinite inflation of everything
not only
to their advantage.
Not only did they utilize it to rule in their own nations, they accelerated every single element all of it and necessitated and manufactured consent for the public for doing so by manufacturing European civil wars.
Harry G. Mann says maybe Scrump can use his neat books to edit Leviathan down a bit. Leviathan's fine. It's not too bad. It's a bit wordy in places.
Just read.
Yeah.
Can you? If you can't read, it's not for you.
It's very technical in the same way that Schmitt's quite technical.
Yes.
It's borderline jurist language in places, but it's very deliberate in what it the way it does. It shouldn't be taken as an entertaining read. It should be taken as like a political science textbook mixed with like a jurist exercise.
It's just hard.
Yeah. It's not comfortable because it's true and it's also technical, but yeah. I'm reading Reign of Quantity and the Time of the Time, Sign of the Times at the moment. It's a beautiful book. It is a beautiful book.
Yes, you've read that. That's a great read. Look, at the end of the day, the revolution of mass and scale has happened. Technology, technique and industry, technique in managing money, and techniques in managing people through mass media, mass political engagement, further developments of communications like the internet. These things, I'm afraid, are all with us to stay until it all collapses.
Yes.
I mean, we can't sit here and pretend that tomorrow America is going to go to a gold standard and everything's going to be fixed, or that the BRICS countries are going to come up with a gold standard and we're going to go to that and it's going to be fixed. There is no fixing it. And this is the reason why the elites won't fix it, because I think a lot of them deep down know, especially at the high level, that they can't.
Yeah.
And the only way to not have their heads get chopped off in the street is to keep just making the ball rolling.
It's the only thing they know how to do. And we've talked about this, and I've talked about this in a lot of my written work. If you're interested in some of the more theory side of what we do, do read our Substack.
Yep.
Because there's quite a lot on there that draws on that. We are a bit less, I suppose we do, we use quotes quite often on these streams. Less so with a lot of the research-based stuff we've been doing recently. But if you go through our back catalogue, we are quite literature-heavy in places.
Yep.
And reading all of that and getting all the soup of what AA distills down in things like populist delusion, it's very obvious that most people are not only unwilling to see what's going on, but do not have the reference points to be able to.
Yeah. I mean, someone in the chat there is making some sort of point about competency crisis. It's not so much a competency crisis, because the elites we have today were not born in a period, even when things could be fixed, you know, 80 or 90 years ago. The same problems were still terminal and chronic as they are now. That's why World War II happened.
Well, these are... people talk about I'm writing something about the baby boomers currently, because the baby boomers were really the inheritors of this system. They did not set it up. In fact, the agency that the boomers are given is incredible to me, because people don't understand how time works, it seems.
Well, no, it's just
that the baby boomers were not alive during World War II.
No.
They didn't undertake the post-war settlement. They were not people who were involved in setting up the world of 1945 that they then lived in. They were only 18, really, by the end of the 60s, a lot of them. The baby boomers were born into the 50s. It's that period between kind of 45 and 55, really, that they're all born in. There's early boomers, late boomers are a bit different, but it all kind of shakes out. So really, they're only 20-somethings in the 70s. They're only really getting into positions of power by the 80s.
Yeah.
And I'd say, honestly, the boomer decade is the 90s. The 90s is like boomerism writ large.
Late 80s, early 90s is Reagan basically dies out, because with him, the silent generation goes. A final point I wanted to make.
Just, I know, I've got plenty of time. So.
Forever and ever, just don't consider the elites being wrong because they don't fix the situation we are in.
Yeah.
That completely misses the mark, because they can't. And I think that's one of the most vital things you've got to understand. And it's something we have always put in as a sort of prerequisite when we research anything, is we come at it with the assumption that the problem before us can't really be fixed.
Yeah.
And the only reason the elites would actually bother to provide a solution for it is because they know it can't be fixed.
But the point I'd like to make, and the point I want to make, and I've been trying to write an article for ages about the idea of most people being the equivalent of political non-combatants, that all of this, if you do elite theory, if you believe that this is all as it is because of the division of labor run by a small amount of people and everyone else just does not have a say in the process, which is true, then you can't blame generations. Blaming the boomers, blaming the silent generation, blaming the greatest generation doesn't make any sense.
No.
It doesn't make any sense, because it is the elites of those generations. And the permanent cohort, which is always a mix of generations, is always people about 40 that consult at the top to people who are in their 70s, some in their 80s. And it's that gambit that they run. It is always a multi-generational regime that has its own plans. And that's where the infinite bubble comes from. It is not a bottom-up project. I read so much stuff from places like Unheard, which has this bottom-up approach to it.
It tries to blame people for being complicit in economic crises that have been manufactured by their own elites.
Yes, you will see a lot of media. You'll see it in the conservative media, even in stuff that's addressing some of the stuff that we talk about. They do it in a bottom-up way. That you can't address the things that we address and also write for somewhere like Unheard that was set up by the Tory party. You can't do what we do and also appear on somewhere like GB News, because the answer can't be the people who are in charge are in charge and the British voter has no say. He does nothing, has never done anything.
Well, yeah,
he has never had a say.
The answers to the problems of our time are either non-existent or illegal.
Yes.
And that is by design. It's not just how it ended up.
But it's just that I am not to blame, you are not to blame, very likely your parents and grandparents are not to blame.
Unless they're like members of the Fabian Society or, you know, high up Tory members or something.
It's what we always say. They are in power and you are not.
Yep.
It's as simple as that. And a lot of people, again, that's why I talk about some of the Dino stuff being a bit misguided, is yes, they partake in the system. But they really are inheritors, again, just inheritors of it. They are passively partaking in the way things are for them.
Yes.
They are a population. And that's why the rhetoric of war, total war, and all of that, it all grows out of the idea of the voter. You can't have total war without democracy, really.
No.
You can't have an idea of a populace as an enemy in the abstract without, like, total war and without democracy. It doesn't make any sense. Like the people weren't seeing like the French people. It was Napoleon. They didn't actually go into France and bust the place up.
Well, I think one of the things as well is partly why we maybe don't discuss specific elements of economic theory in the way that we used to.
Should have voted for Godard, sorry.
Because, you know, it's just it almost to a certain extent isn't relevant, because what elites do when they manufacture or reorientate economic relationship is not achieve economic goals. They use economic means to achieve political ends. Yes. And that's always the element that we've tried to sort of look at. Fair enough, we've had a little bit of a discussion here of, you know, what happens to elements of culture and some of the elements of finance people basically need to bump into to live day to day, and how that's been made inconvenient by the bubble. But the ultimate crux of the bubble and the reason why it exists is because it cements the power and, sorry, the political and economic relationships of an elite class that we've been ruled over for over a century.
Well, you can't have a large amount of people rule, but you also can't have a large amount of people rule and not have an overarching, you know, can't have a small amount of people rule and not have an overarching vision. There is an overarching vision for all of this.
Mm.
There is something that is being worked towards. There is not just passive pragmatism in all of this. There is, in the way that the system is set out, in the way that the infinite bubble grows, it's everything, as I said, media. That's why online media and setting up alternate media, I think, is not the answer to all of this.
No.
Simply creating more noise and creating more media is not the answer to media. Another one of my things I keep saying is there are not managerial solutions long-term to managerialism. You can't, it's like the reverse march to the institutions. You can't control the bubble by taking it over and keeping inflating it.
No. I mean, it's something I was sort of pointing out to people on Twitter the other day, that really, if anything, having an ability to complain about how our elites oppress us on the internet 24/7 is really just a way for us to cope about it and actually be subjected to more oppression than otherwise would have been possible. Because we now feel that we could, because we can voice our opinion about it online, that somehow fixes it or makes it better.
It is extremely old man yells at clown. It's a good cloud, sorry.
To finish off on the actual subject we have this evening.
Yes.
I was sitting having a last look at the notes for the stream before we started earlier on this evening at half an hour before, 25 minutes before. What do I see on Twitter? Just then, Michael Burry of Big Short fame puts $1.6 billion Big Short on the entire stock market.
Michael Burry, famous for shorting the housing market and people calling him crazy, has just shorted the entire American economy. This is like, also Jim Cramer has said that he's confident in the structural soundness of the American economy. So Jim Cramer has said that the American economy is in good shape, and Michael Burry has put $1.6 billion in, you should call this the bigger short, really.
Yeah, because he put more than that in for his housing one, I believe.
$1.6
billion isn't worth what it was worth fucking 15 years ago.
Even Michael Burry is a victim to inflation, but still.
Yes.
Thank you for the $10 glow in the dark there. The paperwork of the economy became too important that the physical market for the physical market, sorry, which also makes it easier to control. I changed a few zeros here and there versus I need to control a mine and maintain a factory. Yeah, the abstraction. The bubble is only possible with technology.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
I mean, this is one of the things as well I remember discussing with people when I was at Mises U last year, as they were talking about elements of economy as if it was all joined up.
Yeah.
And it's like something me and you, again, sort of take for granted now, but that whole notion that, like, you know, start of the financial year, the government comes up with a budget, it spends, you know, $2 billion, and it expects to get back in tax $2 billion at the end of the year, and that this $2 billion that's got at the end of the year is then used to fund the next year of spending.
Yes.
This obviously does not happen anymore, not in any way, shape, or form. Are we really to believe that there is an office full of, you know, HMRC actually spends, you know, however much time and money making sure that every single penny of tax is accurately calculated so that the government can then go and spend that within its own budget based on its how much interest it can pay on how much of that they've loaned out, and it all joins up? No, it doesn't.
No.
Tax at the end gets burnt up. The money required for next year is printed anew because, as Glow in the Dark says there, all you need to do is put money, or, you know, numbers in a spreadsheet.
Yes.
There's not even like vans and vaults of money that need to be equated for anymore, because when was the last time anyone paid physical tax in cash?
The whole thing we keep making allusions to is the fact the Fort Knox is empty.
Mm-hmm.
The they run out of Rattlecan. The one man with the Rattlecan in Fort Knox ever runs out. The American economy's doomed because people will realize that actually the US doesn't have any holdings of anything. It just says it does.
Yes.
And it and no one will say it, dares not say it doesn't. Sorry, no one dares say it doesn't because they have the American military. And if you start calling America's bluff and if you start saying that their farts stink, they'll come in and destroy you.
Yes.
That's what Libya was. just to make your own bank.
And print your own gold, bro.
Just mine your own gold, bro. Oh no, now I'm South Africa. But the solutions to it really are the opposite. It's making people live within their means. It's actually making people create things and then track them properly.
I hate to be the meme, but for that to be the case, billions must die.
It's that unfortunately, you're right. There's only possible post like the final burst. But this,
I mean, like what happens to everybody that doesn't live in civilized Western Europe when the dollar actually goes tits up? What happens to most of Africa and East Asia?
It basically stops existing. Yes.
And that's, if anything, I bet one of the very few good things we can hope for.
The bubble bursting will be deadlier than like nuclear weapons. That's why they say that people who are anti-inflationist are evil, because really the outgrowth of that is they've created such a problem, they've created such a bubble that necessitates such a crash that it will be almost like the thing was infinite, like an infinite amount of financial pain.
Yep.
It will destroy the financial system.
I imagine
it's destroying itself. And the whole point is we're not collapsitarians. We're just saying that this is what will happen.
Yeah, it's a value-free statement.
Yes, it is a value-free
just
statement.
Just imagine a very well-kept, expensive sort of boat shoe, possibly embroidered with Hebrew characters, maybe not, stamping on your face forever.
I don't know, we still have a bit more time. I'd like to do a new segment here, which is Apple of the Week.
Right.
Here's our Apple of the Week. I'll only do this on Mondays. So I'm two Apples. He's observing some behaviours. He's fascinated. Look how fascinated he is. If you like this Apple, please put in chat, that is a good friend. So we know you approve.
Yes, I think I might actually use that phrase in future next time. You know, if I ever happen to come across that horrible section of Twitter that's just unending videos of black on white violence, it's like, oh yes, I'm disturbing behaviours.
That's why a lot of people post the Jade Goodall with just the fascinating. I think that's the best response. So that's why I like this app. Those of you who remember Seal of Approval will remember Seal of the Week. So I thought I'd bring in Friend of the Week. To go back over it, though, if you do want more of this in more detail, head over to our Substack, because there's an article that covers all of this and more, and he's kind of used it as a jumping-off point for all of this. Yeah,
feel free to also look at some of the other economic stuff, like the Cantillon Effect article that I've had up there for ages that people seem to come across every once in a while. And also, if you haven't seen them, the many bits where we touch on economics and economic history in the democratization series, because it gives you, as you described earlier on, fantastic context for basically everything we talk about nowadays.
Well, again, if you want to support the channel, there are members. Thank you to John Morton, Jura, Anthony Keane.
I do believe John Morton as well has also become a Substack subscriber. I don't know, someone did during the course of the stream, so whoever that was, thank you as well.
Yes, thank you very much. Bill Wilson, very funny, big guy. And James Merry, who is, I guess, one of our only resident mods, although I do keep a close eye on the chat.
It's not James Merry and Yez, really.
Yes, yes. We do have a couple of Spanish, just in case the porn bots find us. But
yes, if you've got nothing else to do with your Monday evening, there is Dutton's stream, which is on at the same time as ours, and we would like people to go watch that, because it's just a sort of slightly nasty coincidence that we cross over.
Yeah.
There'll be a Woz stream possibly this evening, and then I think later on for the Americans is also a Yiz stream this evening.
Yes, so there will be. There is a full lineup, so do go and check out Yiz, do go and check out Edward Dutton. Who's the one you said, sorry?
But our good friend Millennial Woz.
Oh, Woz is streaming, yes, of course. So there is a tapestry of people here. People are generally quite kind to us, who are like our regular viewers. You guys are, I'll not get too soppy about it. You guys have been very good in your support, and you're going to support this stream. You're getting your support overall as we've tried to level this up. We will try and maintain this level of content, but it is quite difficult. There will be, either a subset reading or a video on Tuesday, because I've already started both of those, actually. And, of course, we will be streaming again once I get... We'll be streaming on Wednesday, and I believe your last mantra comes out this week?
Ooh, I'm not sure. I might try and get some writing done this Wednesday. We'll see what happens.
Yes. Anyway, a bit of a shorter one today, but it's something we've covered in the past, and it's something we hope to keep covering in the future. But do keep in mind, the bubble is growing.
And there are no solutions.
And there are no solutions. It's like the... good night, everybody. Have a very good evening.